I've got a special invitation for all of you. Are you listening? Because I have some Five Orange juicy details to share. Okay, that was really weird. December 18th to the 21st here in the beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, Turning Point USA is throwing the biggest party of the year, America Fest. Now, what is it? Okay, we're inviting all of our friends from the conservative movement and you, of course. And basically, you're going to have a chance to hear from the biggest speakers in the movement and personalities and celebrities that you know and love who are conservative. Kayleigh McEnany, Congressman Madison Cawthorn, Candace Owens, Charlie Kirk, and today's guest, Jack Posobiec, just to name a few. There's also going to be tons and tons of your favorite country artists. Two full nights of country concerts with stars like Brantley Gilbert, Ray Lynn, and Russell Dickerson. So come sing your little hearts out. Tickets are going very fast, especially because Christmas is coming up and people are kind of giving America Fest tickets as early Christmas gifts. Hint, hint, that's a good idea. Go to tpusa.com/AmericaFest to get your ticket to the party, and you can use code Alex for 25% off, especially for you. The Spillover and America Fest are powered by Turning Point USA, aka the very best. I cannot wait to see all of your beautiful faces and give you a smooch. Okay, that's an HR violation. The best time of the week is back, baby. The Spillover with me, Alex Clark. I love pop culture, politics, juicy headlines, and obviously, cute conservatives, we also have a big weakness for crime stories. So today, I have got the scoop on an organization with an agenda that's pretty sus, if not potentially criminal. It's called the Great Reset, and it's a total reset of the global economy. And basically, COVID-19 was the catalyst to get this done. And before you at me, know that this is not a conservative conspiracy theory or something weird like that. It's being openly discussed by people from all backgrounds. Last year at the World Economic Forum, they announced publicly that they were launching the Great Reset Initiative. The founder and chairman of the World Economic Forum said this, okay? Just hear me out. He said, "The world must act jointly and swiftly to revamp all aspects of our societies and economies, from education to social contracts and working conditions. Every country, from the United States to China, must participate. And every industry, from oil and gas to tech, must be transformed. In short, we need a great reset of capitalism." Little spoopy, don't you think? Now, John Kerry, who is President Biden's special climate envoy or czar or whatever the heck he is, he said that the Biden administration will not only support the Great Reset, they will make sure it, quote, happens with greater speed and with greater intensity than a lot of people might imagine. Heads of major corporations from places like Bank of America and Microsoft have spoken in favor of the Great Reset or a new economic era. And not only have they spoken up about it, they attended the forum. Everyone was there. The who's who of the world was there, from tech giants to Prince Charles. And two key parts to the Great Reset that really explain what its objectives are one, social programs like free healthcare, a guaranteed government job, the Green New Deal, typical socialist garbage. And two, it will require that businesses be evaluated not only on how much money they make and normal things like that, but on how much woke criteria they meet. They're going to be rated on this system called an ESG score. Okay, so what does this stand for? The E stands for environment. How is your company helping with all the climate change stuff like carbon emissions and waste reduction? The S is for social, which is social justice causes, which immediately reminded me of that Yelp initiative to rate businesses based on how, quote unquote, racist they are. And the G is governance. Sort of responsibly handling the money side of your business and stuff like that, but also like how much are you willing to give in and kind of bow to the mob type of thing. Like I said, these major players are eating this stuff up. More than 80% of large companies here in the U.S. already have ESG scores. If you don't believe me, you can Google company ESG scores. You will see everything from Facebook to McDonald's. And fun fact about Facebook, Last week, they changed their company name to Meta because Mark Zuckerberg wants there to basically be an Earth for elites, and then the rest of us peasants, like you and I, will be forced to live out our lives virtually only. We will own nothing, and we will be happy. We will rent everything in the real world, and we will just live virtually. We will meet virtually. We will do work virtually. Everything. And here's what's crazy. Companies like Google and Facebook score low on their ESG scores. Sounds ironic, right? Well, Facebook scored low because, get this, they don't censor enough. My question is, if Facebook-level censorship isn't good enough for these globalists, what is? How much more can we censor people? The whole point of this ESG rating system with the Great Reset is to essentially see who is with the woke and who is against the woke. Who is willing to play by their rules and who isn't? Companies that don't play along will be punished by not being able to create bank accounts and things like that. And I know what you're thinking. Why would a company alienate half of their customers by, say, censoring, you know, all of their conservative customers? That's a lot of money that you're missing out on, right? Well, those at the top of this Great Reset agenda are richer than all of us conservatives combined. We are nothing to them, and our money equates not even a drop in the bucket compared to their wealth and power. The goal is to turn us into a renter society, one where you will own nothing, like I said, and like it. Well, I don't, and I know you don't, and I know Jack Posobiec doesn't. So, joining me today to chat all about the Great Reset and the future of China in America is the senior editor of Human Events, host of the show Human Events Daily, author of The Antifa, Stories from Inside the Black Bloc, Team USA contributor, and Twitter antagonist extraordinaire. He's also my friend and the first big conservative to pay attention to my work and even believe in me before I ever worked at Turning Point USA, which a lot of people don't know. Please welcome my friend, Jack Posobiec. I'm just being completely honest, Jack. A slogan like the Great Reset seems very conspiratorial, but this is very real, isn't it? Is it already here or is it coming soon?
Yeah, no, you're in the Great Reset. You're living the Great Reset. The Great Reset was at the World Economic Forum. So, you know, Davos, which is this huge organization, and it's this huge meeting that's held in Switzerland. They took time off for coronavirus, for COVID-19. Now they're bringing it back. They literally meet top of the world and these huge Western elites, massive power over finance, over militaries in the West, some of the most powerful military forces in the world, of course. They meet and they decide essentially how they want the world to be run in the West. And these people control trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth. BlackRock is a huge part of this group. And so the World Economic Forum, which is run by Klaus Schwab, is the one that puts on Davos every year, and they have all these various members. So they came up with the term Great Reset. June 2020 was the first time this was held. And what they said was, because of the auspices of COVID-19, that because all of economic activity had kind of paused, right? It's sort of like the world kind of took a year off, especially in the West, that they said a lot of these things, like the green movement, the Green New Deal, a lot of the ways that they're planning to reform, what they call it, reform market capitalism, reform our economy, reform the way everything is done, they are going to kick it into high gear and introduce things that they had been planning to introduce maybe 5-10 years down the road. They're going to do it now, and they're going to do it all at once. They're calling it what? Stakeholder capitalism, collective capitalism, if you will. And the idea being that these companies are going to be pushing this idea of a shared governance, right? So have you heard this phrase ESG?
Yes, yes. I talked about that and I explained all what ESG is, the scoring metric.
Right.
That they're
going to use. ESG is a corporate credit score. So China has this idea of a social credit score. Well, now the ESG is your corporate credit score, your corporate social credit score. So you are now being told by these corporations, everyone's given a rating. The same way that, you know, if you went to go apply for a credit card, if you went to go apply for a loan, like they would do your credit rating, do your credit check, right? Well, now these companies, if they want to get a loan, they have to do an ESG check. And by the way, this applies to some of the most powerful, we're talking, this applies to Facebook, this applies to Zuckerberg, Twitter, Dorsey, et cetera, all of them. If they want to get more money, if they want to get more loans, if they want a better rating for their stock prices, then they have to go through this ESG system. And this is what's being pushed by BlackRock and Blackstone, some of these massive What they are is essentially they're money management firms. And so there's a difference between a money management firm and an investment firm and all these other different types of things. But the basic way to look at it is this. You are seeing the implementation through what's called the Great Reset of left-wing woke ideology, the Green New Deal, all of these different economic forums, all these different economic agendas through the corporate sphere, not through Congress, not through the laws. Remember Schoolhouse Rock, and they tell you how a law is supposed to get passed and it gets voted on.
I'm just a bill.
Right, yeah. They've completely bypassed that system. And now it's going to come. So the Federal Reserve makes loans to these massive wealth managers. Then they are the operations arm of the Fed, and they essentially push this out throughout all the rest of these companies. So money printing, right? People talk about money printing. They've talked about it. It's called quantitative easing. But what it is that loans are given out to these massive corporations. Now, you or I can't go up to the Fed and say, hey, let me get some of that money. Let me get some of that printed money. No. These are people at the top of the top. You're talking about absolute billionaires. You're talking about the hedge funders, the richest of the rich. They are getting access to it, and they're completely, massively flush. Let me explain something. BlackRock alone, one firm, manages $9 trillion. $9 trillion. That's almost half the entire U.S. GDP.
How is it even possible?
If you stack that up. It's possible because of this money printing, because they are printing out this money. They are doing it in terms of leverage debt. They give it out to these corporations. Then they have it. They're getting rich. Their partners are getting rich. Their friends are getting rich. Their stooges like Jerome Powell, who is, they're all insider trading, right? You know, so he's insider trading as the chairman of the Federal Reserve at the same time in terms of this. And what they're doing then is they're going to Wall Street and saying, hey, if you want access to this money, then you have to pass through the filter of the ESG, your environmental, social governance. And when I say governance, I don't mean like, government spending. I mean, are you adhering to leftist values? So if you go to Facebook and you say, if you want access to this, are you censoring conservatives?
Right.
Are you shutting them down? What good of a job are you doing? Oh, I don't know if you're going to get access. So they don't need laws for this. They don't need legislation. They're implementing their agenda. So we talk about why are all the corporations going woke, right?
Because the thing is that I know that conservatives feel like, well, why are all of these companies willing to do this? They're alienating so much of their customer base. And I said a few minutes ago
they
in the intro,
they don't care
because they have way more money than all the conservatives combined. So
It's not about the customers anymore. It's the financialization, because they're not propping this up for the product. Netflix doesn't exist for the product. Disney doesn't exist for the product. It exists to prop up the stock price, right? That's the only thing they care about. So if they know if they want to be woke, then they can get the money, then they can continue going on, their stock price stays up. That's why it feels like you have a complete bifurcation of the stock market and the people who are involved in that at the higher levels versus everyone else who's looking at unemployment, who's looking at the supply chain issues, everything that we've seen going on this year that seems to be completely separate. And they say, wait a minute, how come you guys are doing so well and the rest of us are experiencing all this economic suffering? We're also, and by the way, keep in mind, this is inflation, right? This is completely inflationary. It's hyperinflation. It's something that we saw from the Weimar Republic. Many countries and regimes have tried this throughout the years. And what it is something that you see in the decline of a system, in the decline of a country, a decline of an empire, something where people are saying, look, this thing is going to crap anyway, so we might as well make as much money as we possibly can before it dissolves.
Would it be fair to say that these companies like Twitter, Facebook, Google, that they're not even actually woke or care about these leftist values? It's not a virtuous thing. It's just how to make money to comply by these rules. Or do they actually believe that these different initiatives are going to save the world?
Well, I think you do have both. I think you do have people there who say, look, you know, we do believe these things. They all the schools they go to preach this stuff from the pulpit of the professor's spot at school, the professor's podium. They are taught that these are that, you know, freedom of speech isn't a thing that matters. Freedom of religion isn't a thing that matters. What matters is, again, that idea of governance. They're not talking about governance of your company. They're talking about governance of society.
Oh, okay.
They're talking about, so ESG, environmental, social, and governance. So they're talking about basically how they understand, right? They completely understand. The left understands, and they've understood this for a long time, the power of corporations in society. So instead of just taking over the institutions, instead of just taking over the Pentagon, the heads of the military, like Milley and all this other stuff we've seen, now they're in your financial system. If they can take over the financial system, then you control all the corporations.
Explain what role Wall Street is playing in the Great Reset.
Right, so this is the operations arm of it. So Wall Street, the companies that get money, the companies that get better loans, the companies that hedge funds decide to go with, they are the ones that have the higher ESG score. And as we said, that's your corporate social credit score. So if you are playing along with woke values, if you are pushing this, if you are making sure you deplatform conservatives, debank conservatives, right? That's not allowing conservatives to have access to the financial system. And if you are following along with any of these, you know, they'll also push these green initiatives. That's one of the huge reasons that we have the supply chain problems we do. That's why there's problems in trucking, there's problems in ports, because they're pushing all of this green crap at a time where the market and the infrastructure just isn't there for it. But it doesn't matter, because these companies are the ones, number one, that stand to profit from it. So it really is one of those things that at the end of the day, it's about some of the oldest things in human nature, some of the oldest things in human history. It's about money. It's about power. It's about greed. And because of people like Larry Fink over at BlackRock, they're going out and they're pushing their values across the rest of America. At the same time, what we also need to talk about is the fact that these firms are now looking into buying up single family housing, right? So the single family housing market and the fact they're keeping interest rates low, that's so that people like you and me, millennials, and then people like Zoomers, they want to keep interest rates completely low. That means, like, all right, put it this way. Do you have a bank account?
Yes.
Do you have money in it?
Yes.
When you look at it, does your money actually grow, or is it kind of the same?
It's the same.
Every time. Well, it didn't used to be that way. You used to be able to see 3% growth on a savings account. We don't have that anymore.
We don't have it?
No. It doesn't exist. You have, if anything, you have lower, if you have money in there, I would say, like, try to invest it. Get out of cash right now, because
into Bitcoin?
So Bitcoin is a hedge against that. Bitcoin is definitely a store of value for people looking at this entire system and saying, if the Fed continues, right, its inflationary policies of printing more and more money, well, that means that over time, your value of your savings, if you have savings in cash, is going to go. So why is Bill Gates buying up all this real estate? Why is BlackRock buying up all this real estate? Because they know that real estate is going to maintain its store of value. It's always going to maintain its value, because people always need land. You need somewhere to live. You need somewhere to grow crops. Now, the difference is they're going to be the ones that own it. You're not going to be the ones that own it. You're going to be ones that live on it. As a renter, you're the ones who work there as a sharecropper or whatever else, as a worker. They want you to be a Russian serf. They want you to be someone, this is the phrase, right, from the great ad of the Great Reset, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. I want to read something to you that I actually pulled up before the show, and it's perfect because that was the phrase that came out of the ad for all of this, but this is an actual quote from, listen to this, World Economic Forum, 2016 annual meeting of the Global Future Council. Welcome to the year 2030. Welcome to my city, or should I say, our city. I don't own anything. I don't own a car. I don't own a house. I don't own any appliances or any clothes. It might seem odd to you, but it makes perfect sense for us in this city. Everything you once considered a product has now become a service.
Okay, this is horrifying. They said 2030?
2030.
So we have less than 10 years, and you believe that this is going to be accomplished?
I'm repeating what they're saying. This is their own statements from the World Economic Forum, from Davos, that they're pushing on everybody else. The idea is that if you don't own anything, because you are just not, we had the the housing crisis of the mid-2000s, right? And they say, well, the housing crisis of the mid-2000s took place. This is sort of like the Wall Street version of it. Well, that took place. It wasn't our fault for selling people subprime, or giving people subprime loans, and then having the government come in and back that up. No. It was your fault, because you shouldn't have taken that loan when you couldn't service it. So, here's what we're going to do now. Instead of you being the landlord, instead of mom and dad being the landlord, and, you know, people having a second house that they rent out, and then they use that to generate wealth. This has always been traditionally in American history, the way that families have accumulated wealth over time is through real estate. You own the family home, then That's passed on. Then there's money that's passed on from father to sons, et cetera, all the way down. And so you eventually are able to buy like a second house. A lot of this market, by the way, the single family home market, if you're not living there, most of the landlords are mom and pop. It's not these massive firms.
Well,
not
the
yet.
Firms like Blackstone and BlackRock, which are two different ones, they're buying up complete subdivisions.
Yep.
In big cities. So when you buy a house then that is owned by them.
And they're paying way over market value for it.
Right. So when you buy a house that is owned by Blackstone or BlackRock, are you paying rent to them?
Well, this is the idea. This is the part they don't tell you, because how do those assets generate money? How do they generate revenue? Off of you.
How?
Because you are going to be going in as a renter. They're getting the loan for half a percentage from what you're getting there, or maybe even a third of what you're getting. They are able to get out loans because they go to the bank and the bank says, well, do I want to loan money to Alex Clark and Jack Posobiec, or do I want to loan out something out to BlackRock, which is this massive firm that I know is going to be good for it. It'll never have any problem. So sure, I'll give them a preferential rate because look at how much money they have, obviously. Well, then the problem though is what happens when they corner the entire market and then I can't buy anything. So, oh, guess what? I'm going to be a renter. So now I'm never going to have wealth accumulation. I'm not going to own anything because I'm going to live in one of these smart cities where I don't own anything. I don't even own clothes.
Who's the first? Which city in America do you think is the first to become a smart city?
Well, I don't think that any of cities are actually going to become smart cities. I think this is just what they're changing for ownership. So the idea is to take the individual, take families, take citizens, take middle class and working class and millennials and Zoomers, and to remove them from the ownership of they're taking ownership and the ability to generate wealth completely away from you. Completely away. They want you to be serfs. So we're going to go back to having land barons. We're going to be going back to having peasants where we can work on farms that are eventually owned by Bill Gates, right?
Who are those people going to be? The peasants.
Right.
Who,
so that's all of us. That's all of us and our kids.
The scariest thing you said is that we won't be able to own clothes, Jack.
Right. They're looking at that the exact same way. They want clothes to be a service where you, have you heard of Rent the Runway?
I use it.
It's already started.
No!
It's already started,
I'm
Alex.
I'm participating in the end of the world.
It's already started. So think of it, right? It's the same idea, though. You will own nothing, right?
Oh my gosh, I'm so freaked out.
Yeah. So this is, and again, like, this isn't some huge, again, it's not some huge conspiracy. It's just people looking at it and saying, you know, why do we do things this way? We can make more money. Why? Because if I sell a dress, I sell it once. We're just talking dresses, right? But if I rent a dress, well, I can rent it every single time.
Oh, it's this genius.
And so now we're just making more money. So it's the idea of putting money ahead of anyone else. And so the companies, right, they're going to be making tons of money off the backs of everybody else. And then you are just going to be a renter, a consumer class. You know, you're never going to amount to anything. Your kids won't amount to anything, because unless you can break out of that system, then you're not going to be able to accumulate wealth. You'll never be able to go through what's really been one of the greatest engines of wealth accumulation has been the United States and the free market and, you know, the ability to go from working class to upper class, right? That you don't see that in other countries the way you do in the United States. But you mentioned before about cities. Now, of course, this isn't going to work in cities because you have places like Washington, D.C. where they try this, but at the same time, they're also allowing crime to go rampant. We've had bank robberies in DC this year, like legit actual bank robberies where people come in with masks and guns, everyone on the floor, bank robberies. But the FBI wants to go after, you know,
school boards
and parents and teachers and everything. Then we've had, we have drive-by shootings. People were going around. Just recently, someone was standing up through their sunroof, just running around and just shooting people indiscriminately in Washington, D.C. This is our nation's capital, right? So our cities are descending into madness. They're absolutely descending into madness. This is why I say it, tell people to get out of cities. This is why a lot of people right now are looking into homesteading. And I just say get out of cities because this entire thing, and because again, if you don't own anything, if you don't have ownership in your community, if you are a renter class, then you're itinerant. At the end of the day, you're itinerant because it doesn't feel like your community. This is, funny enough, this is actually the plot of RoboCop, right? This the company owns the city, then the company owns the police, and then it just goes out of control, and then they have to you know, find some way to deal with the crime. So they make like a cyborg. And then that gets into the transhumanism, which is also coming up right now. Thank you very much, Elon Musk and Neuralink. So a lot of these things that were once science fiction, like when you and I were kids, this was science fiction. Now it's becoming potentially reality. And we actually have to look at that. And by the way, all of this can be changed. All of this can be changed if people, number one, understand what's going on. Understand, like, you don't, you know, if you go to somebody, I wouldn't necessarily say, hey, there's a great reset happening and they're going to own everything and they're taking it all away. Don't do that. Just say, look, I think we're getting into a situation where these big companies, because of the money printing that's going on, they're getting flush with money. The money managers and the hedge funders are making, this is why the ape movement exists. This is why economic populism exists. This is why, you know, GameStop and AMC and so much of these are going up as a way to kind of respond to all of this corruption. And understanding that it is an economic rigged system. Learn financial literacy. Listen to Dave Ramsey. There's a reason that they want to keep you financially illiterate. There's a reason they don't teach you the difference between a credit card and a debit card, you know, when you're in school, but they'll teach you the difference between magma and lava, right? You know, this information that's just essentially useless in the real world. So learn financial literacy. Start with Dave Ramsey or someone simple, then graduate to Richard Kiyosaki. You know, he does Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, learn dollar cost averaging. Crypto is a great example of this. You know, crypto is something, especially Bitcoin and the power of blockchain, the fact that it's actually decentralized. So a lot of crypto right now is issued by companies, right? A lot of the Ethereum, XRP, et cetera. So there's a possibility that that might get classified as a security, but Bitcoin isn't tied to anything. It's completely decentralized. And so it's set up in such a way where you're taking government corruption out of it because no one controls it. And that's the beauty of Bitcoin.
So
you can't control it.
Why is somebody like Elon Musk then, who you're saying is he's kind of working against us then, but he's also promoting things like Bitcoin. So he's kind of working with us. So
because Elon Musk has profited off of the system for the entirety of his career. He's someone who understood how to game the system, who understood how to be the visionary, but also play this game of ESG and the green movement into making vast amounts of it. He completely understands the game, but he's also smart. He's very smart, very highly intelligent. He understands where this is going. He understands that this isn't going to work forever, that it's not going to exist forever. But then he still went on Saturday Night Live and he bashed Bitcoin. He made fun of it. He belittled it. He mocked it. But at the same time, he dropped a few red pills about it the same way. So he's trying to play both sides. That's what Elon Musk is doing. He's trying to come out there and say, I want to be part of the system, so please keep giving me your government contracts. But at the same time, he also intellectually understands that this cannot continue. So even though he's gotten massively rich off of it, look, Elon Musk is telling you, he's making money off the rigged system, but he isn't putting money back into the system. He's putting money into crypto. He's getting out of the US dollar. He's getting out of these things because he understands where all this is going. By the way, a lot of the movement you see right now for the van life movement, right? So van life movement, the fact that that's being pushed right now, right?
People living out of vans?
You know, you're right, so, you know, live out of a camper, go small, simplify, right? Just travel the country and live out of your camper or whatever it is, right?
Reminds me of Gabby Petito.
It does. R.I.P. It actually does. The fact that, you know, a lot of those videos, if you notice, the algorithm on YouTube pushes those heavily, right? Again, own nothing or own very little, right? It's right there. A lot
everything
of this
is a lie.
In.
Everything is like a false reality.
So, and by the way, I'm actually like, you know, if you're someone who, you know, I'm Catholic. So if you're someone who is saying, look, I'm checking out of the material world and I want to go into simple living and this is why, then I think that's a great thing. I actually do think that's a great thing. I'm not necessarily against it, but just understand the economic underpinnings of what you're doing, that if you're not holding money or if you're not holding your wealth or you're not generating any wealth, if you're not in real estate, if you're not in crypto or you're not in these things, precious metals, another great example of that, gold, silver, et cetera, that the US dollar is not a place you want to be right now to make money. So, and by the way, Bitcoin and all these other things, you don't need to be rich to start it. You can just, you know, I have a buddy who he has his debit card set up that every time he makes a purchase, a dollar goes to Bitcoin
oh,
every time.
Neat.
Yeah. So you can set up things like that so that you have a hedge against inflation, so that these crazy economic policies of the Federal Reserve, this inflation, this money printing, as it's going on, it's devaluing all the money. The problem is, of course, the problem is at the end of this, what happens if the US dollar stops being the world reserve currency. And I really do think, and I don't think anyone said this yet, I really do think that the overall plan of the world economic, and this is my assessment, this isn't, you know, like I'm taking this, I just think this is where they're going. They want to push a one world currency.
Right. That's what I was wondering, is the Great Reset the whole, I mean, is this kind of biblical?
I mean, it's biblical in the sense that, you know, the Bible talks about consolidation of power away from God in certain times. I'm not someone who thinks this is that we are, quote unquote, in the end times or anything like that. But the Bible certainly talks about the dangers and the risks associated with consolidation of power. I do think the World Economic Forum would prefer, it'll be like Europe, right? So one day you go to sleep and you have one currency, the next day you wake up and all of your money in your bank account is now denominated by the euro, right? And you didn't have barely any say in that whatsoever. Now in Poland, they didn't do that. And in England, they didn't do that for the majority of the EU. Overnight, your money became one currency, and then that value went up and down depending on where you were, depending on where that was. And so I think that's where they are going with all of this. I think that they want the US dollar and all the other currencies that are out there to be under. The euro was the testbed for this. It was the testbed. They want it to be a situation where, again, they are able to control this. Now, what's interesting is you have kind of a power play there between the US and Davos when it comes to this, because the US is saying, whoa, 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 hold on. Even US elites are going to say, wait a minute. You know, we like being the ones that are at the top of the food chain. What you guys are proposing seems like it would diminish our standing. So you do have some kind of Game of Thrones internecine inter-elite battles there between sort of the great houses, if you will, to carry on the Game of Thrones perspective. And I don't know if people know that, but before I was doing politics, when I was still in the military and in the IC, I ran like a Game of Thrones blog for like 5 years straight.
What?
Yeah, yeah, I did.
That's
and so
fun.
Vice News tried to like do a hit piece on me about it, but I said, I'm completely open about this. And they said, well, you know, I understand politics well because I've read this book series like 5 times. And at the end of the day, human nature doesn't change. You can read the Bible and see that human nature from 2000 years ago doesn't mm-hmm. change to what it is now. You know, people are susceptible to greed, to lust, to avarice, to all these different things. So unless you have something at your center, unless you have something core, unless you have spirituality, unless you have Christianity at your core, unless you're, you know, believe in God and you are worship, like actually actively worshiping God every day and living your life out that way, then of course you're going to fall susceptible to this though.
So let me ask you something. You mentioned RoboCop. So I want to know, what role do you think Hollywood is going to play in the Great Reset?
Well, so Hollywood's role in all of this is twofold. Number one, you see the soft power of Hollywood vis-a-vis China, where you have Chinese firms coming in and bankrolling a lot of these movies. And then on the flip side, you have so many movies that are made now globally for this market. Now, go back to the 1980s, right? You would see anti-Soviet movies are everywhere. James Bond fought the communists for 20 years. You'll never see James Bond fighting China, right?
Ooh, that's so true.
The Avengers, the rest of it, et cetera. So we're at a because of the financialization of the U.S. has gone in that built China up from the 1970s. That was from the foreign direct investment from international investors from the U.S. and the West. They decided that China is a developing country. So we're going to go into China. We're all going to make money. That's where the global financial capital flows are going to go. And the idea being that, right, we're going to move the manufacturing base out of the West. We're going to shut down all manufacturing operations in the U.S., in the West. That's all going to move to China. That's all going to move to Asia. And that the U.S. is going to be this, as I said, this consumer culture of renters. And so what does Hollywood do? Hollywood is there to distract you. Hollywood is there to, you know, make you not have to worry about this stuff. Hollywood is there to say, hey, just pay attention to this, you know, whatever drama is going on, whoever's getting fired, watch the next Marvel movie, just watch the next Disney movie, watch Star Wars 12, Star Wars 15, Star Wars 25. No, by the way, none of us listening to this podcast will live to see the last Star Wars movie.
What do you mean? Why? How do you know that?
Because they're never going to stop making them. They're just never going to stop at this point. Because it's just an assembly line now, right? So it's an assembly line designed to distract you from the most massive roll-up of power and wealth in human history called the Great Reset that's going on right now. And yet we're here distracted by bread and circuses.
Do you remember during the Obama presidency when we had those Occupy Wall Street protests?
Of course.
Were they onto something? Were conservatives completely wrong to write off their concerns?
So, you know, and this is like, it's weird for me to say this, but Antifa may have actually been kind of right about this.
Wait,
I know.
What?
I know.
You wrote a whole book
on Antifa. I know. If you go back to the 1990s, even 1999, Battle of Seattle, when Antifa, now, of course, obviously their tactics, crazy, and we don't support that. But when they attacked the World Trade Organization meeting that was being held in Seattle in 1999, why were they, what was the reason? Preventing China from becoming a member of the World Trade Organization. Antifa actually used to be pro-worker, and they used to be anti-globalist. Then, 2011, the Occupy movement, it was the 1% versus the 99%. You remember that? That was always the big phrase, Zuccotti Park, that spread to, you know, over 100 different cities around the world. And it really was worldwide. London, Tokyo, you saw this. And then somewhere along the way, suddenly Antifa, 10 years later, is on the same side as Bank of America, BlackRock, the World Economic Forum, Citigroup, all the rest. And you've got Rage Against the Machine headlining Coachella, and the whole thing is funded by Citigroup. And it's like, wait a minute, this is Rage Against the Machine. You guys are, but now you're Rage for the Machine. So they've been completely co-opted. That's why they injected these cultural kind of tensions into all of it, because they realize, the people that are behind this realize, that in the United States, the class distinctions of classical Marxism didn't work because we had such a big middle class. So you can't just say haves and have nots because we have this huge middle class. Yes, we have poor and yes, we have rich, but we also have this giant middle. So how do you divide the United States? Racial, ethnic, gender, anything else under the sun, these cultural categories that you can put everybody into and then divide everyone that way. That's the difference. So Antifa now has been co-opted by everybody else to be on that side, which is actually, and this is something that we do talk about in Antifa book, where they have become the shock troops of the ruling class, the shock troops of the World Economic Forum, the shock troops of the people to go after anyone who's an actual populist fighting against these things. Right? They will be the ones sicked on you. Antifa will be sicked on you. Anyone who stands up against this, Antifa or Antifa tactics will be used against you. What does that include? Doxing, personalization, going after yourself, putting your name out. Which leads to stochastic terrorism, which is essentially that, you know, they just demonize. Kristen Sinema, great example of this earlier this year.
Yes.
When, you know, she stands up and says, I think this bill is fiscally irresponsible. And then the media spends a week demonizing her. And then what happens? These left-wing radicals chase her into a bathroom and are screaming at her while she's literally in the bathroom stall using the bathroom. And so just understand the process there. So understand the process of what's going on. Understand that this is a tactic. It's all being done to serve these higher purposes. And these people are being used. They're being completely exploited. They don't even realize what they're doing. They don't even realize what interests they're serving. They have that phrase, who do you protect? Who do you serve? And I said, do you guys ever ask yourself that question? Like, who are you actually serving when you're destroying the mom and pop businesses in the inner cities, burning them down, smashing them, and then places like BlackRock, Blackstone, Amazon, Walmart, Jeff Bezos come in and purchase up all that property, and that family that had the place for 40 years, 50 years is supposed to just what? Fade off into nothingness? Who do you serve?
I want receipts. Who in the conservative movement is compromised, Jack, and working against us with this great reset crap?
Well, I do think that you have a lot of people in that come from the libertarian kind of background to this, not the Mises Institute. I think Mises is actually not part of this, but you do have people that come to it from a libertarian perspective that will say, hey, these are just companies. They're just taking out a loan. That's all it is. You know, they're just taking out a loan and they're just trying to make money. What's wrong with that, Jack? What's wrong with just trying to make a little bit of money and go off? Okay, well, you're actually exploiting people. This is not the free market, right? Because you're eliminating competition. You're eliminating the ability of wealth creation for the American citizen. You're destroying the American family. You're destroying the United States of America from the inside out. You've been doing it for 20 years. And so the problem with conservatism is that somewhere along the way in the 2000s, it became conservatarianism. And so much of the movement became beholden to the service of the corporate empire. And so conservatism was never supposed to be about corporatocracy, right? It was supposed to be about family. It was supposed to be about tradition, supposed to be about faith, right? And all of that was pushed aside because they said, no, it's just about making money. And this is a huge, by the way, this is also someone, you know, for some of these people say, oh, well, it's just about the radical individualism. Well, when you have a hyper focus on the individual, that's actually what leads to wokeism. Because if you're only focused on the individual and you say whatever someone chooses is right, well, then who's to say?
It's right? Narcissistic.
Who's to say, right? Who's to say that, you know, you're what gender you are? Who's to say that science is real? Who's to say that, oh, you shouldn't do that because you have no moral, no social underpinning? And so the conservatives just left this all away. And the woke activists came in and said, well, if they identify this way, who are you to say anything? Because that's their individual choice.
You have unbelievable insight into the CCP in China. Explain how you know so much about China. And then what is China's role in the takeover of America? Is that inevitable? What is their role in the Great Reset?
Thank you. Well, I appreciate it. You know, so it's, you know, My China background is interesting because all the way back in 2006, when I was still in college, I was given the opportunity to do a study abroad. And they said, you know, you could go to Europe, you could go to Australia, or you could go to China. And it was the scholarship that I had, you know, that I had gone out for and actually won. And I said, I want to go to China. And people were looking at me back then. This was, again, the height of the war on terror. The Iraq war was in full swing. This pre-surge, so pre-2007. And I said, you know what? I think that terrorism and the global war on terror is kind of a flash in the pan sort of situation, as I understand that the current threat, but it seems like China is much more of a creeping, long tail, long term situation. So went there in 2006 and I said, oh, yeah, this is going to be a problem. And then
why? So what did you see?
That they were taking things seriously. That they were looking at the United States as saying, we are going to take them down and we are going to reorient our entire society, our entire regime, our entire way of life about progressing forward, about really turning our entire population into a competitive engine against the United States, against the West, creating a new system, an authoritarian system to defeat the West, to take them down. And I eventually moved there a year later, so 2007, lived there for 2 years, learned fluent Mandarin.
Wait, can you say subscribe to the spillover in Mandarin?
Oh, 你真是要听到这个 spillover 的一个 podcast.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Okay, so you moved there, you learned Mandarin.
非常感谢. So, you know, we learned Mandarin, and then I started out working at the American Chamber of Commerce, and then I was eventually working in international business in Shanghai, traveled all around. And, you know, I talked to Chinese people about this, and they would say, look, it's not that we hate America, it's that we want to be where America is.
Ooh.
We want to be you know, at the time it was one US dollar to eight Chinese yuan or renminbi. And they would say, we want to be in a position where it's one renminbi equals eight US dollars. And one thing that someone said to me, and this wasn't a threat, by the way, it was just him explaining, you know, sort of his outlook on things. He said, you know, we have a situation now where American families adopt a lot of Chinese kids. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I'd love to be in a situation where Chinese families are adopting American children.
That's kind of scary.
And it's always stuck with me. That's how they look. Because they're looking at it on a super long-term, 100-year game plan. We don't look at timelines like that. We think about, you know, what's the next thing? What's going on in, you know, our elections are every 4 years.
Yeah, my blood pressure is so high right now during this podcast.
So they want, right. So they want to be really where we were. And so they view this entire, so then I joined, just by way of background, joined the military. China was my predominant focus. I also spent a year at Guantanamo Bay. Got sent there to do counterterrorism, worked in the interrogation cell. And then, but for the most part, I was doing Asia Pacific, and I was also using my Mandarin as a linguist and an intelligence officer eventually. So, you know, really was looking at China and the rise of China and the fact that, and I realized though that the military wasn't the answer because, you know, I'd say, hey, they're, you know, they're building these islands here in international waters. And they'd say, Posobiec, yeah, we see that. Great. And I said, well, they're militarizing them. They're putting missiles on them. Yeah, Posobiec. You know, don't worry. We're working on a strongly worded letter. So I don't think they're going to listen. Ah, you don't know nothing, Posobiec. We're going to go through the UN. That'll solve it. No, I don't think so, because they never used economic leverage. So no one economically, because they were all making money off of the rise of China. But then something happened. China got to the point where they could compete with the United States. And then suddenly the American elites realized, oh, wait a minute. China can compete with us because we made them rich. Now we have a huge problem on our hands. And so what are they doing? They are becoming as authoritarian in the United States as China is authoritarian in their country. Because I would see this. I would see as congressional delegations and governors and other world leaders would come through Shanghai and they would meet with the party. And there was this whole kind of statement early on, back going back to when China was brought into the World Trade Organization. They said, well, if we expose China to the world system, then that will make China more open and economically liberal and more transparent. No, you fools. It's been the exact opposite. Our exposure to their system made our elites more authoritarian. And the reason they're conducting this great reset, the reason they're pushing this ESG stuff, the reason they're pushing this hold, and Charlie Munger, who's partners, business partners, Warren Buffett, some of the richest people in the country, they are telling you openly they want China's financial system. They want the power of the CCP over America's markets, because they know if they have power over the markets, then they have power over essentially everything. They want to fight China through authoritarianism. So they are going to make our country more authoritarian, becoming filthy rich off of rigging the system against us, that they think this is a way to protect their wealth against China. So they've realized that it's gotten too far and realized that they've essentially created a monster. And at this point, unless we radically change our economic system, if we don't radically change our economic system to the point where our money and our economy is not based on this Federal Reserve and money printing and this just huge inflationary bubbles all over the place, then we're never going to be able to compete with China. They are building the One Belt, One Road. They're building it around the world. They're using debt trap diplomacy in places like Asia, in places like the Middle East. They're backfilling us in Afghanistan. They're going to be building pipelines and railroads through Pakistan, et cetera, et cetera.
Was the debacle with Biden pulling us out of Afghanistan somehow him working with China? Like, what was all that?
So I don't know if it's directly related to that, but clearly, you know, he's clearly compromised. He's clearly, through his son and through everything else, I don't think he actually understands what he's doing. I think that he's someone who's just kind of a puppet. He's been a puppet for his entire career, really, certainly the last 10 years or so. This is a guy who, you remember, Barack Obama never even invited him into the residence of the White House for coffee or for breakfast or for dinner.
Yeah, because everyone was like, oh, you know, my gosh, they're BFFs. They have friendship bracelets. There was this whole meme. None of that was real.
Completely fake. You know, because remember, Biden said when he first got into the White House in this current term, he said, oh, you know, I've never actually been in the residence before. So that's the part where the family lives. And that means for 8 years, Barack Obama and Michelle and the kids, and I think Michelle's mother lived there as well, they never once invited Joe Biden to even have a cup of coffee with him.
That is right there. That is a bombshell. A lot of people don't know.
I think people completely missed the importance of that. Is that's Joe Biden's level of power and influence when it comes to this stuff.
So who's running the country?
The Great Reset at this point.
So what does that mean? Like, does that mean a certain company? Is it big tech? Is it Jack Dorsey?
So America's traditionally had three power nodes. You have Wall Street, Washington, D.C., and Hollywood, right? Those are really over the past 100-150 years or so. And of course, Wall Street has grown by leaps and bounds over this. But then Silicon Valley came around. It started in the 90s. Had the original bubble, then it went down, now it's come back. So Silicon Valley is the fourth power node of the United States. So these are the four. So what you're seeing right now play out, the Facebook Karen, Facebook whistleblower operation is part of this, where you're seeing a power struggle among the elites, because They see that Silicon Valley is growing and growing, but they realize that its power hasn't been checked yet. So they're trying to check it with through the Great Reset, through these ESG corporate social scores, your credit scores. You're also seeing it through the idea that they're going to put legislation and regulation on Facebook and the other social media firms. So how are they doing this? They want to bring them in line. What's the biggest difference, right? The biggest difference is that Twitter, Facebook, the entire social media sphere is not where it was anymore, right? Is not where it was in 2016. A complete sea change since then. There will be no freedom of speech online. Why? Because it has been decreed by the elites. This has gotten too far out of control, and they blame Mark Zuckerberg and they blame Jack Dorsey for this. And they are saying, you are the ones who need to be brought to heel. You are the ones who need to fix the situation that you created, and you need to pay us homage and give us praise and tribute and everything else, because you cannot be someone who is more powerful than us. You can compete with us. You can have your situation, but you have to do it along the party line.
Popular conservatives like Candace Owens and Glenn Beck have been touting this idea of we're very close to World War III. We're a lot closer than people think. How do you feel about that?
So I don't necessarily think we're on the cusp of World War III, but at the same time, we don't want that. America doesn't want that. Regardless of who came out on top, I think everyone would kind of lose in a World War III scenario right now, whether Taiwan kicks that off or a situation like you saw in Afghanistan. The U.S. military is not prepared to fight. The U.S. Navy is certainly not prepared to fight. And I say that as a Navy officer who's very, very proud of the Navy, very proud of serving in the Navy. But we are not seeing a military corps that is prepared to do battle with a near-peer competitor like China or Russia or Iran right now. It is absolutely something that would not go well. And so, you know, you get into these situations where I don't think people quite realize how bad that's going to be. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen either. I think that China wants to continue their slow rise. I think they want to continue rotting us, flooding us with fentanyl, keeping our people. I mean, the opioid crisis is because of China.
It's part of the China goal of rotting America, doing all this gendered confusion stuff and race wars and all of that?
Well, unfortunately, no. Actually, you find that a lot of this woke stuff actually comes from just corrupt American elites and corrupt Western elites. China doesn't quite understand it very well. They are actually banning, by the way, portrayals of LGBT in China in terms of media. They're banning private ownership of media right now in China, including news media. They're also cracking down on finance firms, financialization. China's economy has these problems as well. They have shadow banking, a lot of money printing issues. The difference being that they have economic growth that is based on manufacturing and based on things that are real, actual infrastructure, whereas our economic growth is by and large fake and performative. And so they have the ability to actually put out, say, look, you know, here are our exports, we're building these things, we're building these products. So the wealth actually goes back and stays within China that they're extracting from the United States, whereas because in America, nothing is built here, so the wealth doesn't stay here.
Mm. A Pentagon official, I don't know if you saw this, recently resigned because he said U.S. cybersecurity is no match for China. He called our cybersecurity kindergarten level. And I'm not going to lie, when I saw that absolutely scared the crap out of me.
Yeah. So, I mean, Chinese offensive operations in cybersecurity and the cyber realm are leaps and bounds beyond what ours are. And you could think a variety of reasons of why, but we as a U.S. government have decided essentially to not fight with China, do not compete with them when it comes to cyber warfare. The great Facebook outage that happened earlier this year.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a lot of people reach out to me and say that was a dry run. If in a Taiwan invasion scenario. Now, my longstanding assessment on Taiwan is that China does not want to invade Taiwan. That China, the CCP, wants to take over Taiwan the same way they took over Hong Kong. They want it to be this one country, two systems. They want it to be peaceful. They want to just slowly isolate them from the rest of the world. And they've done this over the past 30 years. Isolate them from the rest of the world, be their only economic outlet, cut them off from the rest of the world in terms of their economic growth. They are Silicon Valley West. They make all of the most sophisticated microprocessors and the circuits. That comes all out of Taiwan. That is not, I wish it was in California. I wish that was in, you know, Silicon Valley. That's why it's called Silicon Valley, right? By the way, Silicon, right? But it's just not true anymore. It's Taiwan largely. And so that is a strategic, you know, if you want your microchips and your computers and your cell phones and your F-150s, right, that's coming from Taiwan circuits. Now, if China takes that over, and then if China, you know, either makes a deal or is able to peel South Korea away from this, you've got the CCP in control of all of it. And they want that done peacefully because of the massive amount of economic and technological leverage that would give them over the rest of the planet. So they want this to be, again, they look at things from a 100-year timeline. So they isolate Taiwan and they say, hey, do you want some loans? Do you want, it looks like your bridge needs some work. It looks like your airport needs some work. Oh, it's weird how you can't seem to get any money from Wall Street because we told Wall Street that we wouldn't make any deals with them anymore, that we'd cut them off if they gave you a loan, but we'd love to give you a loan from the Bank of China in Beijing, right? So you see how it works, right? So they're trying to take Taiwan that way. However, if China were faced, if the CCP were faced with a crisis of legitimacy, if they were faced with, the regime was actually faced with a crisis, the way they were at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, this is a huge reason. So in China, you have something called the theory of dynastic cycles. So China's history has always been a history of imperial dynasties that goes back thousands of years, right? You have one dynasty after another. The last dynasty was the Qing dynasty, or actually Manchurian. And then the CCP. So if you look at the CCP as a new dynasty in China, then you'd have to say, well, what is the theory of dynastic decline? Is that eventually one dynasty is given the mandate of heaven. This is their theory. Given the mandate of heaven, they have it for a while. They become powerful. Then they become decadent. Then the decadence leads to failure, leads to corruption, and then they lose the mandate of heaven. So how do you know if you've lost the mandate of heaven? Well, one of the things you would see is economic decline. Another one of the things you'd see is famine. And then the final one you would see is pestilence.
And what is all that?
Like disease. So a widespread disease arriving and then arising and spreading throughout your country could be seen as losing the mandate of heaven, almost like a pandemic, shall we say. And so when this happened, Xi Jinping, of course, understands Chinese history far better than I do. So one of the first things he said about it was that this virus is a demon from hell. And he meant that to say that this virus does not come from heaven. Right. So to front stop that and say this isn't us losing the mandate of heaven, this is something else entirely and we're going to defeat it. Right. And so he was able by and large to do that. But they needed massive economic spending to do this. And this is creating a huge problem for their market and their shadow banking system, which is collapsing right now. If they were faced with actual regime legitimacy threatening, then potentially there could be a scenario where they do want to invade Taiwan. And if that were to take place, one of the first things you would see is a complete shutdown of social media. You would see cyber attacks across the West like you've never seen before. You probably wouldn't be able to access your bank account. GPS would completely go offline. Just imagine, right? Imagine if you can't access your Venmo, your PayPal, your Apple Pay. GPS is gone, right? You can't access your Gmail. You can't
access
any social
media. They're already doing
this,
though, with PayPal and Venmo and stuff. They're already starting this thing of if you are a danger to society, if you're posting things we don't like, then we can limit your access to using our facilities.
Oh, of course.
Whatever.
And this is why conservatives need a parallel economy. They need parallel structures for this thing. But what I'm saying is, imagine what happens if the entire population of the West loses access to all of that overnight.
And that's what would happen in the Great Reset.
That would be day one of a Taiwan invasion scenario. China would just turn that all off and it would have mass chaos across the U.S.
So just to wrap up.
And they can do that with our cybersecurity, with our lack of cybersecurity. They can do that with cyber operations. We can't do that to them.
So what does the end of the Great Reset look like? Like, what does the world look like if these tyrants get what they want? Who wins?
The United States isn't playing to win right now. The American people are focused on bread and circuses, by and large. Not everyone, you know, certainly not people that are listening to this podcast, people who listen to us. But I think the vast majority out there are not paying attention to these things. But I think that I do see changes. I do see ripples, you know, with the vaccine mandates and some of the other things that have been out there because the authoritarianism has crept in and it's become too overt. And it's become too in your face and in your grill that people are starting to stand up. And I think people are trying to wake up. So that's, you know, what they call it the Great Awakening. And that's the only possible answer you can have to the Great Reset.
Jack, where can people find you? Tell us about your book. Tell us about your shows, where to follow you and all
that. Thank you. So, yeah, Human Events Daily. We are the brother podcast to The Spillover under the Turning Point Network. So you can find us there. We do 25 minutes a day or so. So it's our motto is be good, be brief, be gone. And essentially what it is me kind of piggybacking and leveraging my military experience as an intelligence officer. It's your intelligence briefing for the day, giving you the main stories. If you're someone who's busy, you don't have a lot of time to pay attention to the news, but you want to keep abreast of what's going on, you pop that in, 4 or 5 stories, analysis, in, out, done. So you follow that, you go to Apple Podcast, wherever you want. And then, of course, for the book, latest book was AntifaBook.com. You can find out a lot about this. I talk about the underpinnings about Antifa, but then also the background of who they are, who they serve, right? And the fact that they've become the shock troops of the ruling class.
Jack, thank you so much for coming on The Spillover. And also, thank you so much for supporting me from day one.
I think people don't know that, like, even though I like, you and I have been friends for years, but I think this is actually the very first thing we've ever, like, done together.
It is.
Yeah.
So it
people
is.
People don't know that Alex and I are actually really good friends.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Jack.
Thanks, Alex.
Well, that was a little unsettling. I mean, yes, a little scary, but also I would much rather know that kind of stuff than not, so I can kind of prepare for it or look for signs that things are getting worse and know how to make it better. So I really appreciate Jack coming on, but seriously, can't we all just be left alone to get married and have our babies in peace? As conservatives, I don't think we can really afford to put our fingers in our ears anymore and say, la, 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 right? This is go time, baby. If you aren't already, subscribe to The Spillover. Every subscription I get literally makes my entire week and allows us to keep getting bigger and better guests. I also love hearing from all of you. So please leave a 5-star review. Tell me how much you love The Spillover, which episodes you've enjoyed the most. We are back next Thursday at 9 p.m. Pacific and midnight Eastern on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. But as always, you can watch the episodes on Poplitics' YouTube and TPUSA Live at 8 p.m. Eastern on Fridays. That's all I got for you this week. Love you, mean it. Bye. Big dog status, I'm a big dog, big.